This is Matt from PureNintendo.com, and you are listening to the KoopaCast, PureNintendo.com's official podcast. Before we begin, I would like to thank Big Giant Circles for allowing us to use his music for our podcast. To hear more of his work, please check out iTunes.com/BigGiantCircles, or you can go to BigGiantCircles.com. Hello, everyone, and you are listening to the KoopaCast. I am your host, Matt, the Multimedia Manager of PNM and PureNintendo.com, and this is episode 99.5.
Ooh.
This is a continuation of our Switch discussion that we had last week, where we talked about our predictions of what the presentation could have been. Well, the presentation has come and gone, and now we're here to talk about our impressions. I am joined by the exact same crew as I was last week. So, without further ado, this is Matt, joined by Trevor Gould.
Hi, glad to be here. I didn't think I was going to be able to. I pulled some strings, though.
Alex Schramke.
What's going on, everybody?
Harrison Milfeld.
Hey, y'all.
Justin Sharp.
Hey, everyone.
And James Higginbotham.
Hello, everyone, as I wave and no one can see me.
All right. First thing we're going to talk about, actually, is the overall presentation. We're going to start with that. Now, I've talked to you guys a little bit before. We've had a pre-KoopaCast meeting, so I've got a little bit of an idea of what you guys thought about the presentation. Some of us enjoyed it, some of us maybe not so much. So, I mean, what did everybody, like, how was everyone's feeling on the presentation?
I guess, for me, it was adequate. It did what it was supposed to do. They showed off some games in the future that I'm going to be really excited for. And Zelda basically made me excited for the release window. So, not spectacular, but it did what it had to do.
All right.
Yeah, I'm kind of similar along the same lines as Alex. It was serviceable. There were definitely those parts that were just awkward and, you know, weird translation, and just weird pauses throughout the show. You know, where like Nintendo Directs usually have, you know, moving on to the next thing, you know, pretty quickly without those, you know, weird pauses and awkward introductions and things. But otherwise, my highlights of the show were Xenoblade 2 and Zelda being at launch day one. I think those were the Zelda trailer, arguably one of the best trailers, maybe of any game. It really harkened back to that first 2004 Twilight Princess trailer I remember seeing.
Is it the part where people cried?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like it really, really just had a lot of emotion into that trailer. I just thought it was one of the best they've done for the game.
Justin, did you cry?
Anyway. I actually teared up a little bit. Where the music builds towards the end and you see Link riding along the beach. I don't know. It just the music just did such a good job in that trailer. I don't know. They told enough of a story to get you, you know, hooked on wanting more without revealing too much. And I think that's exactly what a trailer needs to do. So kudos to them.
I agree with you on there. I think that was probably one of the best trailers, probably the best trailer Nintendo has ever put out for quite some time. But for the event, though, I was more of in the middle ground because it had its highs and then its lows. And I said coming into this, it's like, you know, Nintendo's either going to knock us out of the park or they're going to swing and miss. There were a lot of moments in there where it's like, yes, this is getting good. And then it's like, what's going on? Obviously, with a live event in Japan, you're going to get a lot of, you know, this being Nintendo's first, you know, live presser that they've done since, like, for a game console or anything gaming related since maybe, well, like the pre-Wii U launch. But I one thing I was very glad that they did at the beginning was like get the price, release date, and everything else out of the way, and then talk about games. I mean, as far as other highlights, seeing Suda 51, Suda 51 there, Zelda trailer, the new Mario title, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and yeah, just a load of everything on there. It just, I think a lot of the negativity that comes past this is like, much like with any other Nintendo product, once it's unveiled and the excitement comes to it, it kind of slowly is like, in a ways, surgically, like it seems like Nintendo surgically just removes bits by bits by bits of excitement. So once you think about it, you're like, yeah, I'm excited for this. And one little bit of news comes out. This little bad news. And you're like, oh. And then one good news comes in to lighten your spirits. Like, oh, great. And then it slowly gets down. That's what I just got from it. I mean, the way you put it, it's like, it was serviceable, but man, it could have been like a huge home run. But that did not stop me from pre-ordering. So that's my thoughts.
All right, James?
Well, yeah, I guess you ask one of the other conferences as a whole. As a whole, it was good. I thought the press conference was the best part, more than what they showed, because it was very Japanese, and I enjoyed that. There was a few points. I giggled at the presentation. But awful, I guess, what Harrison said, everyone else says. The games are a little bit underwhelming. Mario was fantastic. Zelda was fantastic. Suda 51. I love No More Heroes. No More Heroes?
Yeah, No More Heroes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping it's a No More Heroes game instead of something offshoot with Travis Touchdown.
You know what? I don't think he knows what game is being launched for the Switch.
He doesn't know this Travis Touchdown.
And I was going to talk about this.
And that may be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to talk about this a little bit later down the line in this podcast, but we might as well bring it up now since two people have brought up Suda 51. I saw the original one with the translator, the live translator, and he's trying his best to try to keep up with this guy.
That poor confused man.
He's not happy. He's like you could tell. He's like, oh my god, what's happening? What's he talking about? Like, he's going off script. Like, he's not even sure what's going on. I wish I could link this to you guys who are listening at home or maybe in your car of this. Somebody re-released this section of the Suda 51 section of the Treehouse with like closed captions. It's like a different translation of what he's saying. And it's definitely a little bit more spot on. But even if you read the captions, you feel like he really doesn't have a full grasp of what he's doing up there. Like, I can't remember
basically who said it. The only thing.
What's up?
I was going to say, basically the only thing that I got from the retranslation is that he loves the Switch.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think he wants to do something with Travis Touchdown and an indie character is what he hinted at. But even then, he was so vague with his concept. That's like all you could glean from it was maybe something to do with indies and Travis Touchdown.
Oh, yeah. Like somebody said it. I think it was somebody on Twitter, I think. But they actually had a very good impression of it, which is it felt like somebody from Suda 51 just kind of rushed the stage. It just in the middle of this presentation. And he's like, oh, man, I've only got like 2 minutes to say something before security gets me. So I better get it out now. And like, but yeah, I think Suda 51, aside from that, I thought it was done very well. I enjoyed the fact that they just kind of got into the nitty gritty of what we all want to know, which is the price. What's the system like? Tell me about the system. Tell me what you're selling. Don't give me like this big, this is the next level of gaming. Don't give me that Scorpio nonsense that Microsoft tried to pass off on me like last year.
I remember people like the reaction from this is that, oh, this was probably like one of the worst like console launch line, like, not in the lineups, but launch like shows or presentations ever, whatever. And I'm like, I think there's a several bad ones out there. I mean, Nintendo's done some bad pressers, but I think the thing like that was the worst is like complete hyperbole. When did we forget about the first Xbox One launch. I mean, I like that console. I really do. And I like what they do in there. But I remember watching that first launch the month before E3, and it was just like TV, sports, TV, sports, TV, sport. And it did not do anything to make me excited. But then, of course, there was that whole DRM and always online stuff that they eventually abandoned. But I mean, it was basically an art when you saw Sony basically undress them the next month at E3. But I don't know. I that talking point about Nintendo's presser is like, I couldn't stand to me. It was just like, yeah, it added substance down, but the worst, no, it was, yeah.
Were people saying it's worse just because of the presentation? Or
worse because of what was shown. Worse because of what was shown, and the fact that it didn't instill confidence in them to pick it up at launch. Because I've had several friends who have told me that, like, oh, I'm just gonna play it on Wii U, whatever, and like, who else is gonna do that, whatever. I'm like, well, here's the thing with like the Switch though, is yeah, you have that 14-15 million people who bought a Wii U, which is that huge hardcore audience when you think about it. But think of it this way, not a lot of people bought a Wii U, and people who see that Zelda, they're gonna be like, what are they gonna buy, a Wii U or a Switch?
Yeah,
obviously gonna have to buy it. Yeah, that's my point to it. But again, going through this whole thing, I have to say is like, I was excited for seeing the stuff in this presentation, but there are concerns. I will say that.
Since we are getting into the negatives, this would be a good time to transition into Trevor here. I've had a couple of discussions with him already. He's a little salty on the presentation, so he's gonna explain to us why he's so salty.
I'm not sure I get salty.
I will
just say, I've heard a lot of people that seem genuinely thrilled by the presentation and excited, and I'm genuinely happy for them. You know, I think it's always a good thing when any product can bring up, you know, those type of emotions. And to be fair, I was trying to tweet during it, so that might have had something to do with it, but the show for me was, you know, when they talk about bad cuisine and they want to be polite, they say it's edible. The show was edible. But as far as the question you raised on the last show, Matt, if we didn't work for Pure Nintendo and we were just buying a Switch out of pocket, just, you know, for our own enjoyment, not anything related to the site or mag, what would it need to do to get you to buy it? For me, it didn't do anything. For people who've never owned a Wii U, like Harrison brought out, I think it looks promising, but as a Wii U owner, the Switch hasn't shown me anything that I can't already get.
But would you say, though, probably for that, we'll get into the nitty gritty, obviously, in the show, but I mean, we discuss all the games, but even looking as far as what's promised for like the first 2017, even looking at that blows out even not only launch of like the Wii U, but everything that the Wii U had in its first year, maybe even year two as well. So that itself instills at least a bit, I hope, instills some confidence in somebody to buy that probably out there. And maybe even you know, that's what to me, whatever. I mean, when I pre-ordered my Switch, I thought to myself, I was like, was this the right decision or not right now? Or do I want to wait? But also other thoughts kept going to me. I'm like, I really want this thing to succeed so bad because, you know, it is a company I just love so much. And I get annoyed with it at times, but it's like, guys, make this work so bad because I want it to work so, so bad.
Well, the Switch may wind up for me being like the Wii U. I didn't buy it right away. I bought it about a year later. When Mario Odyssey comes out, if there's a bundle or something, I might buy a Switch, but I looked at the games they showed and the games that, frankly, I'm surprised they didn't show because they marched people on stage to talk with no footage, which I found awkward.
Looking at you, but, Sega.
Yeah, I kept think it was on stage. I'm like, wait, what's going on? Are they just getting down without showing anything? But, you know, the biggest game, well, for me, Mario Odyssey was probably the biggest game, but Zelda. But I can get that on the Wii U. And I'm not the sort that's going to notice the difference between 720p versus 900p. To answer your point, Harrison, it didn't really show me. I'm not saying there's not things in the work, the things they're holding for E3, but it didn't show me anything that's like, wow, you know, I got to get this.
But would you say, though, that the tech involved in this whole device at least excites you a little bit more than what the Wii U promised? Because I think that's one thing I came out of it. I was like, yeah, I'm where people were confused when it was focusing on the controller with the Wii U here. When I'm looking as far as, you know, the device and what's inside and what you can do with it, whatever, as far as a portable and a hybrid device, you know, I'm glad that's getting talked about a lot more here. So that at least gives me a little bit excited to it a little in certain points. But I mean, still we're seeing more little things trickle out about this whole thing and wonder if it's the way I could say it, when it comes to like a console launch, whatever, it's best to get the bad stuff out of the way quickly and not wait until like a month or two before launch. But then again, this is, or like a few weeks before launch, because that really kind of, it's something that kind of doomed the Vita almost, aside from other things. But again, I don't want to make a direct comparison because I guarantee you that this thing does sell more than the Vita, obviously. I mean, don't.
I mean, I'm all for innovative tech. I enjoyed the Wii U. I enjoyed the Wii, and I enjoy the various things Nintendo has brought to the industry over the years. They are innovators, but as we've seen time and again, it's innovation's not going to drive hardware sales. It's going to be software. I have no doubt the Switch is going to sell out with Nintendo's sort of limited launch, but what's going to be beyond that? The Wii U had a good launch sale, and you know, it's just they have their numbers sold to their core audience. Zelda's going to drive sales, but it's what's beyond that, and I'm only judging based on what was shown. Obviously, I'm hopeful, but I can only gauge the presentation based on what Nintendo decided to show, not versus what they might show at E3 or, you know, come holiday or whatever.
Can I just say that? Well, oh, sorry. I was just going to bring up real quick. I'm just glad that Trevor's here, so I don't have to be the one who's like grounded and negative. Like I have been in the last, like, I think the last 20 podcasts, I'm like usually the negative one, but now Trevor's kind of taking that role. And thank you, Trevor. Well, I need this vacation.
I think of myself as balanced, not negative.
Can I ask? Can I counter Trevor's point a little more?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I totally feel what Trevor was saying for Thursday night for the presentation. I felt the exact same way. But if you fast forward 9 or 10 hours, and the question to you, Trevor, is all the hands-on that started coming out, the tree houses, did that not change your mind a little bit? That's where it got me when I found out.
I did not watch all the treehouse stuff. I did catch various segments, and maybe I just caught the wrong segments, but seeing them milk a virtual cow and went to Switch did not encourage me.
Well, the thing about that, and going off of what Harrison said, it's interesting what he said about the Wii U presentation, was Nintendo focused so much on the gamepad, no one really knew what the Wii U was, except it was some gamepad. I think they had the opposite problem, is this. They focused on the Switch aspect, but they actually focus on what I think really what's going to make the Switch really cool is the Joy-Con controllers. Those Joy-Con controllers are absolutely amazing, what they can do and what they do. I think that's going to be the full selling point. Like the Wii, people like the Wiimotes. There wasn't really a huge launch on it for the Wii either. A lot of people bought it just for Wii Sports, and that's all they played for months. Or a few of Zelda Twilight Princess. And so I can see those Joy-Cons being a Wii remote selling point for everyone.
Yeah, and it may be, at least just based on the software presentations, and a lot of it goes into pricing too, which I'm sure we'll talk about eventually. I don't want to jump the gun, but the experiences I saw, whether it's 1-2 Switch or ARMS, Bomberman, these are, from what we know now, these aren't going to be like, you know, your budget eShop purchases. These are going to be full retail releases. I didn't see enough to weigh against my wallet to be like, wow, this is a game I want right away. It's more of, this is software that I could see getting in the bargain bin a few months from now, or if Nintendo decides to package it with a controller or in a console bundle. I mean, there was the big two from Nintendo, Zelda, which I can get on Wii U, or Mario Odyssey, which, you know, I'm still excited for that.
All right.
Sorry, the trio stuff didn't sway me as much as something.
I gotcha. I just wanted to make a passing comment that you brought up Bomberman R and the fact that it's like a full retail release. Konami actually like made out a quick statement that says that the $59.99 is not the final MSRP. So we're still kind of waiting on that. Well, I think we're all hoping it's cheaper.
What price do you hope for that one? I'm thinking like 30 or 40.
Yeah, like $29.99. That's what I'm hoping.
I could agree with that.
But I did want to talk a little bit about kind of transition to 1-2 Switch real quick. I mean, I was so sure that that was a pack-in game. Simply for what it was, which was... It was a game that shows off the Nintendo Switch tech. And nope, that thing is a $49.99 retail release. And
I typed during the broadcast. I was on Slack, and I typed when they were showing that. I said, this has to be the pack-in. And I'm just amazed that it's not. And I think even more amazed, I read, you know, the PR spin from Reggie or whatever. Yeah. And I'll let someone else talk on that.
Well, I just wanted to say it was interesting. And Alex kind of picked this up. And this probably means nothing. This guy probably slipped up. But on the Nintendo Treehouse, the guy actually on there says that it comes with Switch, or it comes with the system.
And it's multiplayer right out of the box. It's most of the games 1-2 Switch are for two players and played with two Joy-Cons, you know, comes with the system. So we're going to get...
And it might have been a slip-up, and maybe it was like, maybe it was a pack-in at one point and they decided not to, but it was just kind of interesting that that is what he slipped up in the presentation.
Yeah, I think a pack-in game for something like that would have been very nice, like especially 1-2 Switch, which it's a nice little proof of it's basically it's a prime example of proof of concept. And I don't understand why you wouldn't want to have that included in there. I want to try it out, but I may just wait a little bit because my money's going to go towards Zelda and maybe whether it's Mario Kart or even ARMS or something like that. But this one, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like that's one where you got to get people going on that. I mean,
It makes me wonder if maybe that's the game that they're going to hopefully demo in stores to get people to buy it, because I'm kind of in the same boat. Is I need to experience it first before I think, is this really worth, you know, the $49.99?
How would you be able to demo that in stores knowing that it's not necessarily looking to screen, but you have to have at least another person?
Make sure you have a lot of room to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could pair random people.
Well, it's not all multiplayer, isn't it? There were some single player experiences, I think.
I didn't see one.
There probably are, but not that they've shown.
Yeah, they.
You may be able to play from one player. I don't know. There's like a safe cracker, other ones, but.
Because to me, the most important thing would be with feeling the HD rumble, and that would be like intriguing enough just to, because that sounds really cool, but until like you get it in your hands and you kind of get the concept, I think just that click, that aha moment. When people are playing it, that's going to be what would drive somebody to purchase it.
Yeah.
But without it being a pack-in game, it's just that much of a harder sale because it's so bizarre looking from the outside looking in, you know?
And Nintendo themselves have compared it to Wii Play, and that's certainly what it reminded me of. Wii Play sold like hotcakes, but I had a remote bundle with it. We were getting a game for $10. So to plagiarize Matt from last week when talking about Rapids, if that game sells even moderately decent on its own for $50, I will also eat a hat on the KoopaCast.
This will be a great year for video. But I mean,
so you heard that first, folks. Get your pre-orders in.
Get your pre-orders, get your hats.
Yeah, I'm buying it now.
So something Trev brought up is that Wii Play came with a Wiimote, would you guys buy 1-2 Switch if it was like $80 and it came with a Joy-Con?
A pair of Joy-Con.
A pair of Joy-Cons anyway?
A pair. No, you only get the left one. But yeah, a pair of Joy-Cons. Let me just pull up. A Joy-Con. Yeah, a Joy-Con pair is on retail for $79.99. So yeah, let's say this is $89.99 for 1-2 Switch. It comes with a pair of Joy-Con controllers. Would that make you more or less inclined to purchase 1-2 Switch?
I would definitely seriously consider it.
Yeah,
I'd say more if I'm going to get it anyway.
Yeah, because it would give you a second set of them that you could use for multiplayer. I mean, granted, you only need, I think, just one set, right? One person could use one half and the other could use the other half. So you don't need two full sets. But
are they bundled with just the gray ones or the blue and pink?
Let's say you can choose either or.
Ooh. Yeah, I'd go for it.
Here we go. We got a sale. Awesome. As we're talking about this, like the launch lineup, I wonder how much of this is still fairly fluid. How much of this is Nintendo still deciding on like firm pricing for launch day and a firm launch day lineup? Because we've heard that some indie developers, wasn't it like the Binding of Isaac game? They were saying they were trying to get it for launch day. And I've heard of some other indie developers that want to be on the eShop on the Switch on day one. So there could be, several other games that, we haven't even heard about necessarily that could be there day one. And then, with Konami talking about Bomberman's price being a little fluid and still kind of up in the air, I do wonder if Nintendo will take some of the response, from the fan base and say, hey, maybe 1-2 Switch, we make that $30 or something, based on the response. Or I don't know, like hopefully they're at least considering some of that.
So another launch title that we're looking for at the for Nintendo Switch is ARMS, which is, I guess, a new IP. That's also the one that kind of like that's heavily or not heavily heavily touting the Joy-Con controllers. I want to see what you guys' impression is with this one.
I think it will do to fighting games what Splatoon did for shooters, hopefully, from what I've read from on-screen impressions on there. I know there may be some little mix to it, but I love the design of these fighters. I really, really do. It's something either you really could see Nintendo do. And it's not only charming, but also it does have that bit of flair and color that I really like to see from something that's of a new IP. So that's good to see out there. The name, though, I could say it's stupid, but hopefully it stands for something, like as an acronym, but I mean, it means well on there. But that's one that I'm looking forward to. I really do.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. I don't think it's a launch title, though. You mentioned launch, Matt. It right now it just says spring 2017, so
It's in that launch window, I guess. It's
launch
like
window.
Yeah.
Launch window. Okay. As far as being close to launch, it's definitely like the second or third game I'm thinking about picking up. Especially from what I've heard of hands-on play sessions. They said it's a showcase of the HD Rumble. I've heard that there's a ribbon girl, she's kind of got these ribbon arms that kind of expand as she's throwing her punches, and you can actually feel like the ribbon unraveling, I guess, is what people have been saying with the Joy-Cons. So that's pretty amazing. I really am excited to try that out and to feel, what the HD Rumble can do. It sounds like it's going to be pretty unique. So, and the gameplay looks great. I agree with Harrison. Like, it looks like a Splatoon, this new IP that Nintendo's been working on, kind of their younger developers, have been spearheading some of these new IPs, and it just looks like another winner to me. So I'm excited to play more.
I wouldn't say it goes as far as Splatoon anyway. Like, it gave me that Splatoon vibe, which is like a young development group within Nintendo is coming up with a new IP in there. But I didn't feel like the reception for ARMS was like anywhere close to what we're see what we saw with Splatoon. Because if you guys remember when Splatoon was first announced and when it showed up in E3, and there's those huge lines just to try to get in there to play a little bit of that game, and like everyone was like really clamoring, and that game, like, you know, really just, I'm trying to come up with a more family friendly term to say it, just kicked a lot of butt, I thought, in the last in the year it launched. And like ARMS has definitely got that youthful energy that Nintendo could use, but I don't see it, you know, approaching anywhere near like what Splatoon did.
No, no, it could. I mean, when I saw Splatoon first unveiled, I didn't think much of it. And in terms of success on the like the Wii U, I said like it'll probably sell like when Splatoon first released, I said it might just sell like a million or something like that, and be one of those games that we look back and are like, hey, kind of like Pikmin. It's like, hey, you remember that game? Like, yes, totally. You know, it's something that could have been. But after the success of Splatoon, and now it's almost up the front of basically of like terms of IPs for Nintendo, even up there with like Fire Emblem and even Mario alongside Zelda. But I'm not saying ARMS has the potential to do that. I'm saying it has the potential from what I see.
I could see it being more of like a sleeper hit, perhaps. You know, like maybe more people need to actually get their hands on it. But I could see that being like, you know, people are getting the Switch, like, hey, have you actually tried this game out, ARMS? It's actually really cool. You know, I could see that kind of word of mouth, you know, thing kind of spread. I think what it also has going against it that Splatoon didn't was that it's in the fighting genre. Now it looks like it has some unique twists on the fighting genre. But that genre is, it's a very specific audience, you know what I mean? Like, and even Street Fighter V has only sold through like 2 or 3 million copies. So it's already a very focused market that they're going after, whereas Splatoon was going after the shooter market, which is just huge, you know? So, and I think they hit all the right notes with making theirs a unique shooter. So if they can make theirs a unique fighter, maybe they can bring in some people that normally wouldn't be fighting game fans.
Yeah, I can see that. I would definitely need to pick up the game myself and see like how much will it attract like that, you know, competitive esports audience. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you were like kind of alluding to.
Yeah.
Because it does seem like a little bit lighthearted. It kind of like, of course, it's about punching people, so it reminded me of Punch-Out.
Yeah. You know what it also reminded me was the Ultra Hand that Gunpei Yokoi developed.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it was almost a missed opportunity if they called it like Ultra Hands or Ultra Arms or something with the name Ultra in it. It might have given it a little more pizzazz than just ARMS.
We're going to see a fighter with Ultra ARMS, right? Like, that's going to be in there.
Yeah, Ultra ARMS, yeah. It's got to be.
If there's a DLC down the line, why not have, like, a little Mac, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
Do we all agree, though, with Harrison, that the title is pretty pretty not good?
Yeah, it's pretty meh.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets his point, but it's like, I was like, okay, I get it, but also the half, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of stupid.
Yeah. Well, it's one that you have to explain to people, you know? When you say, hey, have you played ARMS? They're like, ARMS what? Oh, it's a fighting game, and you have these big, long arms. You know, like, if they added, like, one other word to it, you know, some other qualifier, it could have, you know, like, oh, that video game, yeah, I've heard of Ultra ARMS, or, you know, whatever it is, Super ARMS, or...
It may be aptly named, though, because, I mean, my one concern, and I haven't gone hands-on with it, is how much, if you play it strictly motion, you know, how soon before you get tired? How long can you play it?
They did say in the stream that it can be played without motion.
That kind of takes away the charm, I would think.
Well, I think that would be their way of getting into the competitive scene, if that's what they're aiming for. Like, if it's not, like, if it was just all motion controls, like, I really doubt we'd see that in a competitive scene. I'd be really entertained to see that in, like, you know, after on ESPN3 and there's two guys just duking it out with Joy-Cons on stage. But people tend to gravitate towards the traditional controls versus motion controls, like, every single time, even with Splatoon. like everyone wanted to do dual analog versus gyro. Like I felt like I was alone in the pack when I preferred gyro controls.
I did too. No, with that one I did too, because at first I was believing like, oh, you couldn't turn them off. And then until I found out, oh, you could, I was like, oh, well, I'm actually more comfortable with this because I dealt with it. But excuse the really bad joke I'm going to say right now. But, you know, if arms could have a chance for being success and get some, it has some legs, you know what I mean? And throw all the garbage and trash for booing me for that joke.
Throw a tomato.
It might give the Switch a shot in the arm.
I like it.
I think, though, going back to the controls, my personal instinct is playing arms without motion control is sort of like playing Donkey Kong Jungle Beat without the bongos. You can do it, but it just loses some of the magic.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
You're a very bitter person if you're turning that off. If you're playing Donkey Kong Conga without the bongos, you're just a...
It's just a sad life.
You're a maniac.
Yeah. So yeah, those are two launch games. What's up?
Launch window games.
Excuse me, everybody.
Matt, can I jump around on you real quick?
Yeah. What's
up? I've had this question all day, and so I guess going back to one, two. Switch or whatever. Did you guys know that the Joy-Cons, the left one has a motion IR camera on it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think of that?
It looked like it could be fun for rock, paper, scissors or whatever they showed.
Yeah, rock, paper, scissors.
And outside of the game, what do you think they could do with that?
Yeah.
God, if I know.
I did watch one of the mini games, and it was one where you were having to like eat a bunch of sandwiches or something. And so they had the IR pointer pointed at your mouth. So it showed the guy, and he was holding it like 3 or 4 inches away from his mouth. And then he had to like move his mouth up and down. So it was detecting the distance between his mouth being closed and his mouth being open to detect, you know, how fast he was eating sandwiches.
What?
It was pretty crazy.
That can't exist. If that existed, I would see it all over like Twitter. Like that would be every single GIF that every person would have posted.
Well, it's out there. Go look for it.
It's a real thing.
Yeah. I do hope they do some other stuff with it, and I do think they can. I mean, if it's an IR pointer like, you know, the Wii remotes. I mean, it's, you know, you could use it for, you know, aiming Samus's arm cannon. So, you know, I could see it being implemented for a number of different things. So.
Yeah,
I'm more hesitant on it because, to me, I think it'll fall kind of like what the 3DS did with the AR functionality. I think the AR would have been so cool if they had pushed and done more with that, and they really just kind of left it untapped on the 3DS. I hope that's not the case with the Switch and that they find some cool uses for it. But right now, I can't say that I'm excited about it.
Quality of life.
Yeah, they put a lot of technology into that Joy-Con.
You can scan it and check your heartbeat.
If you're only buying one Joy-Con for $50, would you just buy the left one or would you buy the right one without it?
Why would you buy only one Joy-Con?
I don't know. You can. It's $50 for one Joy-Con and $80
for one.
$40.
But the
It'd
only
be
like
playing Donkey Kong without the bucks.
Yeah, but no, but like. I'm trying to think of that. Like, what's the only scenario I can think of in which you purchase one single Joy-Con is because you have broken that Joy-Con.
Well,
that's
probably
the reason to have it on market.
What if you're playing arms and you want to be like Homer and get one beefy arm? So you just buy one and just fight left-handed in arms.
Yeah, but you already got the two Joy-Cons on the Switch, so.
Well, I traded them away for some 3DS games, okay?
Yeah. You traded one Joy-Con for a copy of Arms.
Yeah, like with Bomberman. Yeah, with Bomberman, you can play with four Joy-Cons, horizontally. So think of buying one Joy-Con as buying like a third Wii remote or a fourth Wii remote. So I think it'll definitely happen. One of them only has an NFC Connect chip in it. So that's a consideration. If you bought the left one, the right one has the NFC and the IR. So
I hope they explain that pretty well in the box too. It's like, hey, this is what this one is able to do. But
yeah.
I'm sorry. That's just making me think. I don't know if we have it on our list here, but does it seem like Amiibo is getting sort of pushed to the background with Switch?
No, Amiibo's still there. They showed that off during the initial presentation. The Amiibo will be the NFC readers on the right Joy-Con, so you can still use Amiibo with it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I know. I just
back, but
I'm just wondering if it's not going to be as emphasized. It seemed like we haven't heard much. I mean, there's the new Zelda ones, but
I think they just kind of wanted to have everything calm down and then get ready and then just launch the Switch, and then we'll hear about more about Amiibos kind of like, I don't know, maybe in a couple months. Maybe we'll hear about it in the upcoming Fire Emblem Direct.
Well, you know, they can take their time with Amiibo. My wallet's going to need some time to recover from the Switch and then also getting all the Zelda Amiibos. I need time. My wallet needs to recover.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. So we talked about 1-2 Switch. We talked about ARMS. Do we want to get a little bit into Bomberman R?
Yeah.
It's a Bomberman game.
Konami's making games, not pachinko.
That was the most surprising thing, is Konami is still making game software that's not pachinko-based.
That's great.
Yeah,
I'm
great.
Glad they showed it. Go ahead.
I was just going to make a stupid joke. I was going to say, I hope that there's like a pachinko minigame Easter egg hidden somewhere in Bomberman. That would be amazing.
It'll be a Metal Gear Solid themed pachinko minigame.
Yes.
Oh, that'd
be
great.
I'm glad they showed it after the fact. I thought it was kind of, I found it a little odd when they had the little montage for like 90 seconds of various games, that some of the games seemed to get buried under there.
I'm glad they showed it subsequently on Treehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the things. I think I would have tried to show a little bit more, and I guess they were banking on the fact that, you know, Treehouse would go hands on with it. But
kind of reminds me of the Sega CD commercial. It's like, you have seen the games, haven't you? Wrong answer, man.
Show them.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the angry video game nerd video review of that. That was so great.
That was classic.
Oh.
Good times.
All right. So, besides what we just mentioned, the other two launch titles, or the other three launch titles, excuse me, there's Just Dance 2017. I think we don't need to go over that. I think everybody knows what to expect with Just Dance 2017.
It's the year 2017.
Yep.
I already have it on Wii U. I don't think I need it again.
And then Skylanders Imaginators.
I already have it on Wii U. One thing with that, which is interesting, is it sounds like there's not going to be the portal. You can actually scan the figures direct, which will be nice, because James probably can testify, if you get, you know, you get a collection of portals over the years that you really, you know, only need the newest one.
Yeah.
All right. And of course, I'm going to skip over Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild here, because I know we want to talk about that for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So other games they talked about were Splatoon 2. So, you know,
woo! I'm actually surprised it was a numbered sequel. I thought going in it was going to be a remaster, but yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I was surprised as well.
And
I wonder if it might have been, though, just from reading some comments from people who have gone hands-on with it. Not that it's a bad thing, but they do say it plays, feels very similar. So, for better or worse.
I mean, I can see that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry?
It would have been nice if they had added maybe some more single-player content, or you know, maybe there will be, but they just haven't mentioned it yet.
Yeah, that's one thing I liked about the first one, too. That was... it had a very silly but cute but nice little single player experience, which I will say probably one of the best final boss fights I ever had, or fun ones I had. So.
Oh yeah, and it sounds like it's filling in some of the gaps, gameplay wise, in the first one, you know, so it seems very iterative and not necessarily, you know, sequel worthy maybe. But like the local multiplayer, that's going to be pretty big. I do wish there was like a co-op mode, you know, because Katie and I, you know, it'd be fun to play together, you know, like a co-op type of thing in Splatoon. And I think all they had in the first game was they had like that balloon popping mode, which was,
yeah,
you know, it would be great if there was some sort of single player campaign experience where we could play together, you know,
yeah,
you know, locally.
So. Yeah, they haven't mentioned anything about the single player, but there's obviously going to be one because if you look on Splatoon 2's page on Nintendo.com, okay, so apparently they're going to go full in with continuity in Splatoon. So it's been 2 years since Splatoon launched. So according to this, the game takes place 2 years after the original Splatoon. So it's continuity there, which means there's a story, which means, you know, single player. So I guess there was a little bit more to that whole, was it Marie, right? The blue haired one with her back turned to the camera in like some kind of serious pose. Which to me contradicts the entire tone of Splatoon all at once.
What, like the seriousness? Or just
Just the seriousness, like just that 2 seconds of like, you know, standing, looking over like the scenery, you know, it's very serious. The colors are kind of dull. It was like that completely contradict everything about Splatoon right there.
In a bad way or just like, really? Like the goodwill or
I mean like specifically like the tone, because like Splatoon's like this, you know, fun, colorful experience, like, you know, there's rock music and stuff like that. And then you just got like this 2-3 seconds of like, you know, instead of bright colors, it's like dulled colors. And it's like, are they trying to inject like seriousness into like this fun game where we're shooting ink at each other?
I think that's not fair to bait. I mean, well, if you look at like the single player mode, when you actually get the little images or something, like the things where it tells like the backstory of Inkopolis and stuff, where it actually has a backstory for Callie Marie. I don't think it's dark, but it's just like it seems a little tragic. I don't want to say tragic, but it's quite interesting. And I don't know, that just doesn't be fair when it's like a millisecond, like a brief second of what we see on there. I mean,
oh no, I'm obviously making too much out of this, but that was definitely interesting. But I mean,
were you still talking about that or?
I was just gonna say that. A couple things I noticed from the trailer that kind of fixed a couple things that I talked about, like maybe in my review, is, well, first of all, there is something like a local multiplayer turf war, which is already better than the stupid popping balloons thing with your buddy next to you.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. And it looked like in some of the multiplayer, there's like they incorporated some of the mechanics from the single player campaign from Splatoon 1 into there. So the you saw the ink rails were in there.
Yeah. And that's cool, because I felt like that stuff was a missed opportunity of not having those in the multiplayer levels in the first one. There were some cool elements in the same campaign.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I got to say about that. I'm sorry, I know you had something else to say, but I noticed we're at like 50 minutes here, and I have to keep, we still have a whole list of things, so I'm going to keep plugging away. Super Mario Odyssey is up next. The Super Mario game that I've wanted since Super Mario 64.
Yeah, when they said that it was going to be like a 3D sandbox world, like Sunshine and 64, I just immediately like happy vibes. I was like, this is what I've been wanting for so long. And I'm glad actually that it's going to be releasing in the holiday season.
Yeah.
That'll give me plenty of time with Zelda to completely exhaust that. And I think that is also going to be, you have a nice strong title that's going to bring people in who are maybe hesitant at first at launch. I think that's going to help sell systems in the holiday season. And that's arguably just as important as, you know, being an early adopter in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. That game, please tell me, like, for about a few seconds when that trailer happened, when it started up in the city, you're thinking, like, is this Bayonetta 2 or is this, or Bayonetta 3, or is this another bit of Splatoon? And then Mario pops there, like, oh, wow. And boy, wow. It just, anytime when they hit a platformer like that, they're just continually trying to hit it. I mean, we haven't even seen much about it, but boy, do I want this game so bad now.
It's funny when you say that, watching Mario run around a city, I instantly was thinking, I was like, what the heck, is this Sonic Adventure now? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I got that vibe too.
Admittedly, it's a bit jarring when that first section, but when you see the rest of the worlds that, you know, Mario's running through, you're like, okay, I can get around this.
It's colorful, the environments are interesting. I love how Mario now, you could see in like the trailer, like he kind of reacts to things, like he's looking at people as he's running by, he has facial expressions. Like, all of that is just like really cool and immersive things. And I don't, like, to me, it's like, it's a little detail, yeah, but I get really excited about stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm just really glad to see him not go with like a Galaxy 3 or something obvious like that. You know, 64 Sunshine, that's all I needed to hear. Because that, not knocking the Galaxy games or 3D World or any of them, they're all very good in their own way, but I think it's an experience that we haven't had for, well, you know, since Sunshine, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it was smart of them to do this open world or sandbox feel like 64 and Sunshine, because it has been longer. You know, as much as people are pining for Galaxy 3, you know, I think everyone was like, oh yeah, this, I could totally go with this, you know, even if they wanted that Galaxy 3, they can wait a little bit longer. It's been a long time since Sunshine.
I think the hat throwing mechanic too is going to make for some interesting platforming, since like they showed that off, you could actually throw that out and then use that to jump off of to get to a higher place.
Yeah.
That's going to make for some really interesting, like, wide open level design.
And obviously I'll need to see. Oh, sorry.
Well, and they showed some varied other platforming mechanics, the backflip, the ground pound, the, you know, side flip, long jump. You know, it looks like there's going to be a lot of, you know, the wall jump, and there should be quite a variety of, and even some new mechanics added.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I need to, you know, get my hands on it to see how the hat throwing works. But to me, that extra mechanic already looks smoother than either of like the spin or the flood pack did in the previous Mario games. Like,
I thought flood was pretty smooth.
I mean, flood was pretty smooth.
I liked flood a lot.
But it's like flood, like using like say the hover nozzle for flood or using the spin, like that kind of like just canceled a lot of Mario's momentum if he was going like really fast. And that always felt to me kind of jarring. Not so much flood, but definitely the star spin did. And this one doesn't seem like it's doing that, which that's good news for me. And obviously we got to keep moving. So away from Mario Sunshine, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 was also announced.
You mean Odyssey?
What did I say?
You said Sunshine. Mario Sunshine.
Sunshine.
No,
we
all
know what it is.
No, I said underscore. but yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, that trailer just came out. I think some of us are extremely excited. Some of us in this very podcast room were very excited about that.
It was a fairly dull presentation up until that point. And when I saw the Monolith Soft logo, I was like, whatever this is, I don't care what it is. It's going to be amazing. So, you know, I was expecting, you know, something completely different, you know, kind of like a Xenoblade 3, but not really a successor, you know. So when it was an actual sequel, I was like, wow, I'm very ready for this. So.
Oh, yeah. And it's
what? Would you say you're feeling it?
I'm really feeling it.
I'm really feeling it.
Yes, we're all feeling it.
I love it. Thank you.
the voice actor for Shulk. Somebody asked him on Twitter, like, "Are you involved in any way, like Xenoblade Chronicles 2, whatever?" And he just posted a YouTube clip of him just saying, like a YouTube clip of, like, "I know nothing." So, but I'm glad this is out. Whatever, like Justin said, it's like when I saw that Monolith Soft logo, I'm like, yes, yes. And then when that popped up, I mean, obviously, one thing I've looked up for is, like, I love the new character designs for this one that they're doing. So much more than what from Xenoblade X. I mean, which game I enjoyed, but I don't know. I felt like this one is a far like a bigger upgrade to it in terms of character design. Thing that surprised me is it's coming out in 2017, which I'm not sure I want to put any money on to say that holds true.
Yeah, don't plan on eating any hats if it doesn't come out.
I'll eat Trevor's hat if.
Yeah, so no, I think we can all agree it's probably going to get delayed.
Yeah,
I'm hopeful. I mean, I'm hopelessly hopeful. That's why I think that's a more accurate way to say that.
Yeah,
like as in, oh please. But yeah,
I like the new character designs too. Like Harrison, I think they it's got a nice look to it.
Yeah,
it's got a little bit of Xenogears look to it, I think too. You know what? I just realized I did not see any giant robots in this one at all.
Nope, no giant robots.
But they got to be in there somewhere because, like, that's like in every game somewhere somehow.
Yeah. Well, they did. They did have like mountable animals. You saw that, like saber-toothed tiger at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be other mounts that you know come later on that might be mechs or you know something.
Yeah. But obviously there's not really much to go on except Null Pond are still there. The design's much more Xenoblade Chronicles than Xenoblade X, but there's still a little bit of X and Xenogears kind of thrown in there as well. We don't know if this is like a direct sequel to Xenoblade Chronicles 1. Obviously it's Xenoblade Chronicles 2, but we don't know like the time difference, I should say.
Probably the Final Fantasy route of just, you know, they're connected in some way, but it's, not so much.
Yeah, like, oh, there's no pawn, so it's a Xenoblade game.
Yeah, yeah. The no pawn are going to be the new Chocobos. So.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, something for you music fans out there that I kind of picked up on is that a lot of the Xenoblade Chronicles music team has returned for Xenoblade Chronicles 2. So Mitsuda's back here, which is, you know, good for anybody who's a fan of Mitsuda. Ace is also back. It's not Ace Plus. It's just Ace. So, sorry for you Kenji Hiramatsu fans out there. But yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. There you go.
Excited. Very excited.
Super excited. Other games they brought up in the presentation too, Skyrim, but we don't know if it's the remastered edition or not. Square Enix is.
I'll say, is it better be?
Oh yeah,
the remastered edition.
We all.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'm glad that they didn't have this at launch because having Skyrim launch alongside Zelda, I don't think that's a smart idea because it's.
Yeah.
What are people going to choose for? But if this is the special edition, but again, I think from the footage we've seen from it, it actually is a lot better looking port than if it was the original. If this is the special edition, the special edition, and launches in March, those special editions that launch the PS4 and the Xbox One are going to be discontinued, but on sale. So I hope that thing's not launched $60 because then Bethesda is just like, well, here's Skyrim. Oh, it failed. We don't have to do this anymore.
It's funny because I really like Bethesda as a developer, so I want to see them succeed.
Oh, same here. I love them too. It's just I feel like them pricing it that way, if it's that type of a port, unless there's something different with it, it just seems foolish.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
A bit of other games we saw a new Shin Megami Tensei is going to come out using the Unreal 4 engine. FIFA 2018, Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2, and then Square Enix is coming up with Project Octopath Traveler, which is done by the same guy, by Toyana Asano. He's going to be the producer. He did Final Fantasy 3 and 4 on the DS, Final Fantasy Tactics, War of the Lions, also like DS, not the original. So that's something else to look forward to. So with that, those out of the way, Breath of the Wild, let's talk a little bit about that.
Oh, that trailer. Zelda was voice acting. I'm liking this. I'm liking this, and yeah. That game's going to destroy my life.
Yeah, the voices they did a great job with the voice selection that they have so far. There's a rumor that there might be selectable voice tracks. I don't know if that's going to be in the final version, but it sounds amazing from what they've shown. And in that trailer, I did feel a lot of emotion, you know, watching that. You could feel it just even in the facial animations. And everything is just looking fantastic with the game. Couldn't be more excited. And that to me was the biggest thing, that it was launch day. If that had been like summer, the Switch launch, I wouldn't even be getting one at launch, I don't think. And I'm usually buying Nintendo hardware just because it's Nintendo hardware.
I was super excited. Like, I was kind of lukewarm. I'll admit, I was lukewarm on Breath of the Wild. I was obviously going to get it, but I was still kind of like, I was kind of skeptical after, you know, Skyward Sword. Sorry, I'm still sticking by that. But like after that trailer, like, I'm like, full stop. All right, let's do this. You've convinced me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just from the little bit we saw, what do you guys think it falls on the timeline?
It's in the Fallen Hero timeline. That's my guess.
Yep, I agree with that. After Zelda 2, I think.
Yeah, I could.
It's in the past, but it's also in the future, and it's also for youngin' only.
The way you describe that is like the video, like the VCR scene from Spaceballs, where you're like, when will now be then?
Soon.
Yeah. Hey, there's also a theory. You've heard of the timeline convergence theory?
No.
Where the three split timelines will actually be brought into one with Breath of the Wild. Just because we're seeing different things from different games from various timelines. We're seeing Wind Waker references with the Koroks. We're seeing Twilight Princess references with Castletown is, you know, basically stripped directly from Twilight Princess. And then you have the fountain in this new trailer that Zelda is bathing in, that is a clear reference to Skyward Sword, which, granted, that is the very first one, so it could just be, you know, that's coming from that one way back. But it's amazing all the different references we have, so it could fall anywhere. You know, they're kind of just,
Then how do you explain the Red Zoras then, huh?
Huh? The Red Zoras, yeah.
They freaked me out. I don't know.
I thought they were great looking. I thought they were awesome.
Well, there's also Manta Ray Zoras. You saw in that one scene, there's a Zora in the background that has like a Manta Ray head. Mm-hmm. And then it looks like to the right, there's like a big whale looking Zora, perhaps. Which, of course, the King Zora in Ocarina of Time, you know, was kind of a whale looking thing. He kind of looked a lot different than the other Zoras anyway.
The Majora's Mask, the band members. I think there was a Manta Ray looking one on the drums.
I was thinking of the drummer too.
The Red Zora though, the female one that they showed looked very similar to the Prince Zora in Twilight Princess. Kind of the way the hair, or you know, kind of the dreads, or you know, whatever the little scaly hair piece that they have on with the spots. Looks very similar. So there's obviously they're pulling stuff from a lot of different games into this.
Yeah. Well, I heard an interesting theory, and I got to give a shout out to my Nerd Nation group that I'm a part of, because it came from them. But how about this falls right before Wind Waker, before the great flood that destroyed everything, Hyrule and Wind Waker?
Yeah, maybe.
I think that might be debunked, because I think there's actually a collectible item that is literally salt, and the description mentions the Great Sea.
Yeah. Also, the Koroks and the bird people, weren't they the result of the Great Sea forming? So yeah. How did they come and before also, the Great Sea?
And also the Great Deku Tree, if you did a brief look at it, that looks almost like the same design from Wind Waker. Yeah. I mean, well, design as far as, like, the look. I mean, obviously the cel-shading cartoony style, but the design of the tree, like how the tree and the flora looks, but I don't know, that theory about how it just like converges back into it, that could be very interesting to it. But I had to say though, after I've watched this trailer multiple times just because there's points in that trailer where I'm just gets me pumped and also just kind of emotional, thinking like, my God, this doesn't only have a potential just to be a great Zelda game. I have to say, like, temper my expectations, like, hey, just don't hype yourself too much up, whatever. But it's like, no, it's like looking at that, I'm like, it could easily be like usurp basically whatever the greatest Zelda title out there. I mean, again, I could be just like talking way out, like way too much about it, but this, it has the potential for it. Really does.
It just feels like there's going to be so much more emotion and power in the cutscenes. It's just going to elevate the story to something we haven't really gotten before with a Zelda title.
Oh yeah. And there have been plenty of good scenes out of Zelda games that have gotten emotional, and those were without voice acting.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that putting in there, but with more production to it.
Yeah.
Going to be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know you said you didn't want to get yourself too given to the hype, mm-hmm. Harrison, but you've clearly given yourself into the hype, man. I'm sorry.
I know. I am. No, like that game has me. Like, yes, you have my money. Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
But part of my mind's telling me, calm down. Just litter it down right now. So you know, because I feel like the first sign of a 8 out of 10 review, I'm gonna be like on the keyboard and saying like, oh, how dare you? And it's like, oh, this might be true.
Somebody's getting an all caps like email, Justin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I have to admit, Harrison, I'm very excited as well. You know, I'm trying to keep my expectations in check, but I don't know. It was like 6 months after Skyward Sword where I was like ready for another Zelda, you know, and it's been a long wait, you know, the various delays and, well, not necessarily delays, but just they never had a set date, just kind of pushing the, you know, 2015, 2016, 2017.
All we've had are HD remakes to kind of tide us over.
Yeah. That's true. We have a little bit. But it's not the same though. Like even A Link Between Worlds, I enjoyed that a lot on the 3DS. But we it's been so long since we've gotten a uniquely new Zelda game, you know?
Yeah.
We've basically had Link Between Worlds, Twilight Princess HD, Wind Waker HD over the last 6 years, you know, or five years, I guess, five and some change. So I am so ready for a new one. So.
Don't forget Triforce Heroes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I've been playing through that some more recently, actually, just to get my Zelda fix. And it, you know, it has its charm. I feel like it's more fun when it's played with people. And it has its place for sure.
Yeah. I mean, this game. Is gonna
How
help
about after
so
Wind Waker?
After Wind Waker? Well, yeah. So Wind Waker and Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks are in the adult era of Link succeeding when the timeline splits. So it could be over there. The timeline convergence theory is making more and more sense because it has elements from all three splits in the timeline. How is that possible if it's in one distinct split, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because Twilight Princess is in the middle part of the split where it's the child era where Link succeeds. So it's got all these elements. You gotta think something's coming together or
see
it has to eventually, or it's gonna get too confusing.
Yeah. But the weird part is like with Wind Waker, like the Triforce went away. Like Ganon gave up his piece of the Triforce to form the whole thing, and that whole Triforce went away when the king, you know, did his wish. So mm-hmm. At that point, we just had Ganondorf. You know, no powers or anything like that, just two swords, let's duke it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Ganon we're seeing right here is just, you know, the wholly consumed by the Triforce of power, evil wizard pig thing that we got from, like, you know, the decline of Hyrule timeline.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I kind of hope they don't do is trying to rewrite their timeline a little bit. You know what I mean? The fact that they're bringing in all these elements. Oh yeah, Koroks were always there. Like if they try and explain away that, you know, those three splits into saying that, oh yeah, we've got references back to Skyward Sword. Oh yeah, the Koroks have always been here. The Zoras have always been their own thing. oh yeah, the Rito tribe from Wind Waker. Yeah, they're these new bird things, but they kind of evolved. Like, I hope that they're not creating like a fourth split. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like, hey, Ocarina of Time kind of went into this thing now. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that whatever work they did to do that three split one is not all erased.
I have no doubt that Nintendo did have a timeline long ago, like mm-hmm. for this series, but I felt like the reason they didn't release it is because fans, well, like an official timeline, because fans demanded it so much. Because I mean, if you go back to interviews of like, you know, I think early 2000 when Miyamoto was talking about how, if you think about Ocarina of Time, that actually split off. That was the only thing that got the split timeline theory started. But I feel like the reason why it only got started out is because we want a timeline, fans say, and like, okay, here you go. You know, and it's like, they made it in response, they made the timeline in response to fans, because the fans made the timeline themselves almost, as in like they demanded it. And I don't know, but again, I find the three timelines split interesting still to this day. One thing I do want to say though is in the trailer though, I like Zelda's design, especially in the, not the hero's clothes, but the clothes I've seen that like Link has as well. Which makes me lead me to believe right now, we're probably not going to see the green tunic at all in this game. I think that's unless it's like a super secret thing that you had to get.
Don't say never. We might see it.
Will you eat your hat if we see it?
No, no more hats. I will.
Oh no, I have too many good hats.
Harrison will eat Link's hat.
Wait, no, not Eslo. That'd be awful.
Oh, yeah. Good old Eslo. Yeah.
Tastes like chicken.
Minish Cap. That's a classic. Oh.
Now I want to play Minish Cap. Thanks, Justin.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin. Everyone's saying that. Listen to the podcast. Thanks. Now I got to play that before Breath of the Wild comes out. Hey, but that's a great one to play, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's not the longest Zelda game, but it's sweet.
And we named it our favorite GBA game a few issues back.
Yeah, fantastic.
Oh, man. We're like an hour 15 in. We have so much, still so much to go.
I'm surprised we haven't talked more about Zelda. We could honestly talk more about it.
We could talk more about Zelda, but we still have to talk about online services.
Yeah, we can move on.
We need to talk about some online services.
Yeah.
This is a step in a direction. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that. Obviously, they're acknowledging that Nintendo needs to be more involved online, but they're definitely doing it in an interesting way. Well, first of all, there is going to be like, you know, when Switch launches, you can sign up for online. There's a free trial period that goes all the way up to fall 2017, where it'll be paid. Currently, there's been no pricing that's been announced. So, you know, they'll announce something later, obviously, maybe around E3. We don't know right now. Another thing that comes with this online paid service is that you can rent classic Nintendo titles for a month. But the thing is, they last only a month, and then you're given the option to either buy them or not. And then if you don't, it just goes away and a new game comes up. So, I mean, what do you guys think of that so far?
Yeah, well, one thing you didn't mention there, Matt, it says with newly added online play, the NES and Super NES games. So that's very interesting detail that when I was going through our list of stuff to talk about, that I hadn't thought about. So apparently they may add online play to some of these NES and Super NES games.
I'm interested to see how that's going to work.
Yeah, and how many titles are they going to actually support with that? It's very, very intriguing, but there was so little that was announced, it was hard to get excited for it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like when it comes into knowing online, they tend to flub up a bit of the fundamentals, but with this, I the idea of a paid online service does not bother me. That just seems very, if you want a very good personal service on there, you're just gonna have to, like, you know, pay up for it. But this one game, this one game per month, SNES or NES game per month with the online play, and I'm just trying to figure out, again, there's more questions, whatever, like, what else is with this online, and what is the deal with, like, the virtual console? So, my, I don't know, it's just, like, this seems very backwards, almost, because, obviously, when you look at the PlayStation and Xbox, when you get a free game, obviously, that's tied to the, if you take away the account, it's gone, or, it's like, that's the case, whether here, it's gone after a month, and with the added online, I think what Nintendo's trying to do here is they want... They obviously, it's like, hey, say if Super Mario Kart is one of the games on there with online play, they want to make sure that fact, like, hey, people are actually playing this online, and then that's what you could do. I guess that's what I'm trying to think, like, hey, this is online month for one. So that's not to say, though, that I'm very upset with certain things about this.
I'll have to say, for me personally, from my point of view, is I'm not a very big online multiplayer fan. I am generally antisocial when it comes to gaming. So I think in order for me to get on board with the paid online, the price is going to have to be right, and that free trial is going to have to really wow me. As far as, like, you know, the community goes and having the voice chat. It's going to really have to prove it to itself in order to get me to shell out whatever it is a month or per year to go on it. I'm pretty skeptical about it. But that's just because I don't use online enough to where I'd justify paying month to month unless it was really, really compelling. And I worry some people are going to be like the same way, you know?
I mean, I agree with that.
Well, that was my concern.
That's all I was going to say. You can keep going, Trev.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that was my concern with games like Splatoon 2, which, you know, Splatoon, it's bread and butter is going online with it. You know, or to some extent, you know, Mario Kart, which, you know, 5 million have been playing on the Wii U online for free. It's just for... It's not a new thing for the industry, but for Nintendo, it'll be new for gamers that primarily are used to playing on Nintendo hardware. Now we have to pay online, and, you know, frankly, Nintendo's done okay online, but they are behind in many respects to their immediate competition. So they better make sure if they're charging that it's a really compelling package that they're offering. Because otherwise, it would be impossible to escape the immediate comparisons to Microsoft or Sony.
And I think that's what, I guess, maybe Harrison was getting at, is that 1 month sample of a game really worth someone like Alex or myself, who barely, very rarely play online with Nintendo, Mario Kart, or whatever, to buy a whole year, even at a discounted price? I bought Xbox Live back in the day because I used to play a lot of Halo online. I don't play Mario Kart online. I don't own Splatoon. I don't play Smash Brothers online. I very rarely got online with the Wii U. Why would I pay $60 for a year or whatever it's going to be for online services on the Switch if I'm only going to play like an hour or two that whole year?
Mm-hmm. I think it's the fact, like, I'm going off a quote from Console or a line from Console Wars, the book, how... Arakawa from when we led NO, like, to Nova America, how when it came to them, like, releasing these, when they putting out releases for the I think it was right during the Super Nintendo or even the NES, is they wanted to have a steady stream of releases but make sure that people were playing almost like the same game at the same time. That's where I don't know, that was a very interesting thing for me, like, to kind of draw off from.
All right.
Well, I will say, just before we move on, I am glad that things like access to the eShop will still be available even if you don't do the paid subscription. So that makes me feel a little less... I know, like, not all of my console features will be locked behind a price wall. That makes me feel a little bit better about it. But like I said, I got to know the price, and then I'll determine if it's worth it or not.
And let me just, I should have done this in the beginning, but let me just do a quick run through of what you can get when you get the subscription service. You get online gameplay, online lobby and voice chat app on your smart device. You get a monthly game download. You get exclusive deals, access to Nintendo eShop, register and manage friends, share screenshots, do social media, and access to Switch parental controls app. Whereas the non-subscribers, they're going to get access to Nintendo eShop, friends, screenshots, social media, and the parental controls app. So they will not be able to do online gameplay or lobby and voice chat or monthly game download or the exclusive deals.
Can is the voice about... chat worth elaborating on?
Yeah, that I think it is.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. It's a, that's a there's a whole app for that now.
I just don't understand the implementation.
Yeah, there's an app for it already. It's called Discord. It's what gamers use to voice chat when they play games.
Or we use Google Hangouts.
I mean, is that like us hopping on Slack when we were playing like Lost Reavers or something? I mean, it exactly. just doesn't yeah. seem.
Yeah, Discord is actually a fully free app. Has very good noise cancellation, and it's a very good app. Like when I get online and play, you know, Rocket League or something like that with friends, Discord is usually where we go. So the fact that there's free, you know, options available, the fact that they're like, oh yeah, you're gonna have voice chat or access to this app with your paid subscription. That's not even going to be a factor for me, you know. It's there's got to be something else that I'm paying for. If it's just that app and one or two games a month, it's really not going to be an option.
I don't understand why it's not integrated with the games. Like, why do I have to turn on my smartphone to voice chat?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems clunky.
This is, again, this is like, it seems like any little step that Nintendo puts towards online, they take two steps back. Yeah. And I don't know, but Reggie's like, I read an interview with Reggie saying about how the reasoning behind this was they didn't want people having like bulky headsets. And I'm like, okay. But also, think of it this way. If your phone has Bluetooth, and if you have like a Bluetooth headset hanging around, whatever, I mean, that's fine. It's like, hey, this is on, and it doesn't have to it doesn't matter either way. But it's God, that's strange. Really yeah. strange.
Yeah, because yeah, it's much more comfortable.
Really...
What's
yeah,
up?
Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, yeah, because it's much more comfortable leaning towards your phone while you're playing games and going, oh, can you say that again? Can you say that again?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
it just seemed like such an out of touch thing to say, unfortunately. Like to say that, you basically alienate everyone who's an audiophile. And who's doing voice chat? Is it people that appreciate audio? Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's people that want to have good sound quality. So of course they want a headset with, you know, good quality. Like to say that, you've basically lost anyone that's not a Nintendo fan possibly getting your system. It's just a little frustrating.
Yeah, because I mean, the best thing about chat on the system is that, you know, the audio that comes out of people's, you know, that from the voices is mixed with the audio of the game. You don't have two separate sources of audio coming into you at the same time. Like yeah. you obviously are with this smartphone thing.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, and like in some ways I can understand it because it keeps the voice chat in one spot. They don't have to program menus and all this stuff into their games, right, to support voice chat. So let's say maybe they come out with a game and they can add voice chat support later on just by adding a little menu in their voice chat app that says, hey, you can do, you know, voice chat here. Yeah. Now, and maybe they have something else in mind, to your point, Matt, of actually, you know, you're logging into your Nintendo account through this app and maybe it can see what game you're playing, because obviously you can share screenshots and different things like that. So maybe there's a way that I can actually pipe that audio, like stream that audio from the game into the speaker or whatever and output it through your phone in addition to having a voice chat. I don't know. If that's the case, then it may not be as bad. And then people could use Bluetooth headphones on their phone and, you know, whatever they want. But it just seemed like hey, here's some details that aren't really going to make you happy, and we're going to reveal stuff that may make you happy later. Like, to me, just don't talk about it at all, you know, if it's not gonna be a selling point, you know. Sorry, I felt like I was ranting there. But.
No, you're totally, I mean, I feel like you're right on about most of the stuff here. Like, and
people with the new iPhones are out of luck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I did not even think that.
Just Bluetooth or that's about it.
Well, actually, no. Well, with a new iPhone, though.
It's you get adapters and stuff, but.
It comes with adapter. It does. So.
Yeah.
Okay. I completely forgot. Wow.
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, again, when it comes and we experience it, then obviously we're going to make a better verdict. But right now, I'm just that's the one I'm least sold on, is that separate app. Mm-hmm. And if they just mm-hmm. and if they made this app to justify the lobby making, you know, just make an app that just does the lobby making and the, what are they, make appointments for your game.
Mm-hmm.
Which... do we really need Nintendo's help to make appointments for games?
No.
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 I hope not.
Yeah. It's not like I'm going to be out and just like, also my phone comes in. I was like, oh no! What did I do? I forgot to play Splatoon.
I guess at this point, it's kind of like in the movie where you're standing over the cliff face and deciding whether you want to cross the rickety rope bridge or not. That's where we're at right now with online.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, of course, one of the boards that may or may not be on this bridge is pricing. So, like we did last week, let's hear some... let's go through the scenario again. But this time, you're not fired. You still get your jobs.
Yes.
Nice.
But I want to know, you know, what's the price that would be convince you to, you know, hop on online services?
I think for me, this may sound like stingy, but I think like the most I would pay is like $20 a year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Alex. Like, I really don't want this to be like $50 or $60 a year. Like, I don't know.
That's too much, and there's not enough features to justify it, in my opinion.
Yeah,
but again, we still don't know so much about it. I mean, we don't even know,
right?
We don't even know what the UI is, because people who have played over there, they've all they saw was that one screen, and they obviously could be hiding more about that stuff.
That's true. So, like, as it stands right now, I would say $20 a year. If, you know, depending on whatever incentives, you maybe I go up to 60, but I don't want to be paying like $100 a year for, you know, the privilege to play online and a couple VC games here and there, even if I do get to end up owning them, if they change that policy and it's not just playing them for a month or whatever.
I don't even know if I'd be going online with it. I mean, it's not even going to have a Netflix app.
Well, that's
Oh, I'm sorry.
At launch. But then again, we don't know. Again, they're all going off that same Business Insider, like insight, like that, report. So, I mean, I'll take basically the idea of like at launch at word, but I don't know. It's my God, no Netflix. I am not buying this.
Under an ideal, if they have a good system, I would say 20 to 40 range. Assuming there's software that I want to go online with, but I mean, truth be told, other than Mario Kart every now and then, I really don't play online much. So, I might not be the audience.
All right, I'd go with $20. $20 seems like a good price, because they're not convincing me about anything with this online services so far. And their past history with online games has not convinced me either. So, I mean, you really, if you charge like I guess $30 would be the absolute limit if I was really like forced. But yeah, if it's any more than that, you know, you better be coming at me with something amazing to convince me to buy this online service. All right. I think with that, we're going to wrap this up, because we are at like an hour and a half. And
like back in the old days.
Yeah. This is like an old-fashioned podcast right here. So you know, I want to thank Justin, Harrison, James, and Trevor for joining me, and Alex.
And Alex.
Hey, guys. Thanks for noticing.
I was like, I almost forgot somebody.
Hilarious.
So, yeah, thank you all for joining me on episode 99.5. I want to thank our readers for reading our awesome website and our magazine. You are also awesome for that. I want to thank our listeners for listening to the KoopaCast. We have a new KoopaCast up every week. If you want to look up more episodes of the KoopaCast, you can always go to purenintendo.com/KoopaCast, or you can go to iTunes and search for KoopaCast in the podcast. And so with that, we'll see you guys next week.
Goodbye.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
See you.